can see again where Job placed his emphasis. And that needs to be stressed. So what Job really, to his credit, he always emphasized in that lament and in the speeches that follow in response to his friends, his relationship to God. That's what he focuses on. And I think that is said to his credit. And we need to make that as well. I feel so estranged. I feel cut off from him, is the kind of things that he's saying. Why has God sent these calamities upon me? Emphasizing how God is dealing with him and how Job is struggling to comprehend that and to cope with that in some way. So I wanted to emphasize that this, to me, is further proof that Job never lost his faith. He never gave that up. Now, he's human. And he's trying as best he can, as best he knows how, to struggle with these things. And if such a plight ever comes upon us, we're going to struggle too. And maybe some of us already have struggled in some respects. And let us respond like Job did. Let's not focus on what we lost. Those things, book of Colossians say, those things perish with the using anyway. All the materials, all the wealth, that doesn't matter anyway. What matters is how we stand before God and our relationship with Him. So I want to emphasize that before we get into the speeches. I think that needs to be said to Job's credit. He's still a godly man. And I want to bring that up. Okay. So Job's opening lamentation, having just been completed, and that was at the end of chapter 3. Now we're going to start seeing the friends speak. And they, to me, they were obviously surprised at what Job said in chapter 3. I think they were. And not just surprised, I think they were disappointed in what they heard. And I'm saying that based on what they say in their speeches. Their words mean something. Judging from their speeches, obviously their words do not match the original reason for which they came. Quickly going back to chapter 2 and verse 11, what did the Bible say? Why did they come? For what purpose? They came to comfort Him. That's why they came. But that's not what they wound up doing. They wound up passing judgment on Him. And so, most likely, I would say, now this is just my surmises, most likely, I would think that they expected Job to repent, confess. Because again, what is their line of thinking? Why does man suffer? Because he's done something wrong. He's just sinned somewhere along the line. And they see Job suffering, so they're thinking this man has done something wrong somewhere. So in Job's opening lament, I think Jeff's guess is they probably expected Job to offer some kind of repentance and confession of sin. And they didn't hear that. So based on that, failing to hear that, then they launch into these judgments that are unbiased, prejudiced. I'm sorry, they are biased and prejudiced. And they're unfounded. And they're highly judgmental and critical of Job. And the first to speak is who? Eliphaz is the first to speak, and that takes us to chapter 4. So here we go with the speeches, and we're going to call them round 1, round 2, and round 3, because there were cycles of speeches. And all three of them speak in each round except Zophar. He only speaks in the first two rounds. He doesn't speak in round 3. So Eliphaz and Bildad speak three times. Zophar speaks twice. And to each one, Job replies. And we'll go through the text in that way. So here's Eliphaz's argument. Chapter 4, verse 1 through the end of chapter 5. They're 2 chapters long in the Scripture. All right. He first wonders, and let's get verse 1 just for the moment. He first wonders if Job is prepared to listen to another person. Verse 2, if one ventures a word with you, will you become impatient? That means what? Now, I've got something to say, Job. And you need to pay attention to what I'm going to have to say. Now, are you prepared to listen to me? Are you going to get defensive? Are you going to get impatient with me? Are you going to get mad with what I've got to say? Job's former life. He did commend Job's prior days. What kinds of things are listed in verses 3 and 4? Having just said what he says in verse 2, then he says, now look, Job, you've been a pretty good guy previously. What kind of things has Job done that Eliphaz mentions in verses 3 and 4. All right, he had taught. He had been a counselor. He had been an advisor, a teacher. Anything else he mentions? All right. That's a good person. Somebody who does something like that. But now, he says in verses 5 and 6, now, Job, you've done that to other people. And now the shoe's on the other foot. So what do you need to do? Don't be the hypocrite. Do what? Let somebody teach you now. Because you're in obvious need of instruction. Now I want you to put yourself in Job's shoes just for the moment and try as best you can. If you heard a supposed friend say that to you who's come all the way from wherever he came, however long a journey that was, Eliphaz came to comfort. And these are the first words that he says to you. How'd that make you feel? What would you think about that? I think so. That's right. We would typically, I think, respond that way. This is not the kind of help I need right now. Can't you see how I'm suffering? And that's the kind of comfort you're going to give. Not good. Yes, Harold. Well, that's true. Harold's suggesting that Job's patience may be thin because he's suffering anyway, and that's true. And sometimes when we're that miserable, we don't listen too well. And I think that's an apt observation. He also comments what kind of men these were. Maybe they had been advisors in other worldly situations, and they're not going to be thinking the same along the same lines as Job would be thinking. And those may be true. But those, nonetheless, from Job's perspective, those are the first words that he heard. And they're not going to be very helpful to him. At least down through verse 5, he says, now all this has come to you. This is what's been brought your way. It touches you, and you are dismayed. It's not your fear of God, your confidence, and the integrity of your ways, your hope. So Eliphaz wants Job to now receive instruction in the same way that Job had always been willing to give instruction to other people. The situations have been reversed. And Eliphaz wants to know if Job's going to be receptive of those things. Now start looking in verse 7. And Eliphaz makes his argumentation based on two criteria. The first is his observations that occur in life. Let's read now together verses 7 through 11 of Job chapter 4. Trevor, would you read those verses for us, please, 7 through 11? Okay. First question. Whoever perished being innocent? Absolutely. And I think there's even more than an accusation of Job not being innocent. Before we make the point that I think is painfully insinuated. Eliphaz's theology, is it true? It's true. It's true. What does Paul teach us in Galatians 6? Be not deceived, God is not mocked. Whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he also reap. To he who sows to the flesh, what's he going to reap? Of the flesh you'll reap corruption. He who sows to the Spirit. So it is theologically correct in what he's saying. However, his application is pitiful. And painfully, what does he insinuate? about Job's predicament. Who has just recently perished? His children. What's the insinuation here? They were sinful. And look at the expressive words. Verse 9. By the breath of God they perish, and by the blast of His anger. God just blew those sinners away because they deserved it. That's what He's insinuating. He didn't come out and say it. But I don't know how you would take such words. And again, put yourself in Job's shoes. How would you feel about that being said to you? Job didn't perish. He's not dead. But his children are. This is divine punishment that Jehovah brought. I'll tell you, that's tough. That would be really tough to swallow that. Yeah, he had no knowledge, did he? He just did that in perhaps they had sinned in their thoughts or in their minds, and I'm going to try to take care of that. But there was no sinister insinuation. There's one right here. Eliphaz is saying it. The only reason that these calamities have happened is because somewhere, somebody in your family, you, your children both, you're getting what you deserve. Because whoever perished being innocent? So that just doesn't happen, Job. These things happen for a reason. So right off the bat, I mean, do you get the idea that Eliphaz is pretty blunt? He's not beating around the bush. He's not even trying to ease into it. He's just launching right into this judgment against Job. That thought had escaped me previously. But if you think about it, at least down through verse 11, I think that is precisely what Eliphaz is saying. And Job has to stomach that. Job has to receive that. He has to hear it. You think he's still grieving over his children? I would imagine so. I don't think his pain is gone because of that. He still has to stomach that. Now, lesson. Let's be careful. We need to be careful when applying what we think we know. Make sure we have all the facts. Now, I'm not saying that to discourage judging, because what does the Bible say about judgment? Or judging, in the sense, not God doing the judging, but even people doing the judging. All right. John 7:24, judge with righteous judgment. And who are we warned against in Matthew 7? Beware of who? False prophets who come to you as wolves in sheep clothing. Well, that begs the obvious question, doesn't it? How are you going to know if it's a wolf or a sheep? By their fruits you shall know. That's a judgment. So we're going to have to make some judgments. But we base it with righteous judgment. We have to have the facts. And by comparison, think about this. Did Eliphaz have all the facts?
No, it seemed like he had any of the facts.
Pardon?
Didn't seem like he had any of the facts.
That's correct. But Job isn't the one doing the judging. Eliphaz is. He did not have the facts. He was very presumptuous in his application of his theology. And he was just flat wrong about what he was saying in terms of applying his theology. Now, the principle of it was correct. Yes, in the end, do the wicked perish? Yes, they do. If not in this life, when judgment comes, then the wicked will perish. Yes. But Eliphaz is saying, this is precisely why, Job, you're suffering, and this is precisely, Job, why your children perished, because somebody's guilty somewhere. And that was not correct. And Job was having to hear that. So, if we must make judgments, and time will come when we must either individually or maybe even collectively as a group of God's people, we must pass some sort of judgment because of some reason, because of some incident that's happened. We need to use righteous judgment, not presumptuous judgment. Not like Eliphaz did. Okay. So now he continues. His second criteria, the first one was what he observed. His second criteria is verses 12 to 21. He says he had received a vision. And it's a vision that he admitted in verses 14 and 15 just terrified him. You'll see how that's described, verses 14 and 15. Dread came upon me, and trembling, and made all my bones shake. Then the spirit passed by my face, and the hair of my flesh bristled up. I just couldn't believe what I was seeing. Now, of course, Eliphaz thought the vision was from who? Obviously. This is from God. This is a divine message. And so he has given that to me, and Job, I'm going to pass this on to you, because I'm here to help you. So this was his vision. The basic message. Look in verses 17 to 21. Rob, read those verses for us, please. This is the basic gist of the vision.
Can a mortal be more righteous than God? Can a man be more pure than his Maker? If he puts no trust in his servants, if he charges his angels with error, how much more those who dwell in places of clay, whose foundation is in the dust, who are crushed before a moth. They are broken in pieces from morning until evening. They perish forever with no one regarding. Does not their own excellence go away? They die even without wisdom.
All right. Basically, the vision, Eliphaz is emphasizing the awesomeness of God and the nothingness of man. And in relative terms, is that correct? That's correct. Is man able to stand before such a God? Does man deserve to stand before such a God? No, we don't. There's that much difference between the divine Creator and man. Verse 18 seems to be of particular note. He puts no trust even in his servants. And I would take that to mean his spiritual servants, his non-human, his angelic servants. Again, reference in verse 18. And against his angels he charges error. Have there been angels that God has judged in the past? Yes, the Bible speaks about that. So if that be the case, Job, Eliphaz is saying, then verse 19, how much more those who dwell in houses of clay whose foundation is in the dust? Who's that speaking about? Yeah. See, that's a very poetic. He just could have said, what about man? But he didn't say it that way. He said, those who dwell in houses, we are houses of clay. And if God has so treated spiritual or angelic servants who have sinned in the past and who have no right to stand before Him, well then, Job, what do you think about mortal man? God's going to deal with us according to what we've done, is what He's saying. And He said, this vision has relayed that to me, and I'm passing that on to you. Between morning and evening, they're broken in pieces. Unobserved, they perish. They die yet without wisdom. This is the basic meaning of that vision that Eliphaz was talking about. True words. There's nothing false here in what he's saying, but I'm just asking the question: how helpful is the relating of this vision to Job at the present moment? How much is it going to help him? not help, but it made it worse. Job, do you think Job needs to be reminded how pitiful he is with respect to how he compares to God? I doubt that was any help to him. I don't think he didn't know that. I think he already knew that. So again, I'm not trying to be extra super critical of Eliphaz, but we're going to look at what he said, and we're going to offer what we think that it is. And so far, he's not been very much help to Job. Even though some words that he said are true, but not helpful. Okay. Yes, go ahead.
Think of Galatians 6. He says, can a man be overtaken in a fault? Doesn't say, if you surmise, if you get the idea, if you suppose he's overtaken in a fault, that means he's caught.
Yes.
And the fault is there.
Yes. And it's known. Yes, you are correct. All right. Yes, Charles.
Just how much we think of this.
Right. That's correct. Eliphaz did express some understanding, albeit how limited it was, of that there is that divine beings can fall. And God has in the past judged them, charged them with error. That was known to some extent, as Charles says. Okay. Anything through chapter 4 that I missed? Trevor and then Brother Pepper. Any error in the vision? Meaning, I don't know what you mean by that.
Maybe I'm just looking at things hard, but you know, I mean, there's an insinuation that the error is there. And I think this revelation is actually being demonic. This is not a divine revelation at all. Just given, it reminds me so much of Genesis 3, where this being is asking questions, you know, probably like, how do you know this is true?
Mm-hmm. I think that's plausible. And I did not mean to indicate when I said earlier that Eliphaz thought the vision was from God. I'm not saying that it was. I'm thinking that's what he thought. But I'm not going to ascribe the vision to Jehovah. So I didn't mean to give that implication if that's what you thought I meant. I probably ought to clarify that. I think some things Trevor says are possible, very possible. Brother Pepper?
These three friends were so disappointed in Job, but think how disappointed Satan was for a completely different reason, because he was in on what was going on.
Yeah.
And it should be our goal every day to disappoint Satan.
So far, Job has not come through for him, has he? It's kind of like we've got this drama going on stage, and there are two people in the audience. Who are those two? Well, I shouldn't say two people. Two beings in the audience. God and Satan. And both wanting something to happen. And just seeing what's going to play out. Now, God being omniscient, He already knew. But you can just see Satan is just, I'm just waiting for it to come out of Job's mouth. And then I'll just be so thrilled. And so far, Job's not going along with him, is he? I think that's a good observation. Rob?
Spirit passed before his face. In verse 16, a form was before my eyes. Neither one clearly identified. Yet when God appeared to man in other instances, there was no doubt that it was him appearing to them.
All right.
So it seems to me there's little doubt as to where this vision came from.
Yes, I'm not going to say that this was from God. No indication of that. But in Eliphaz's mind, he was convinced. This is from God. And I'm almost as if he's saying, I've been sitting here to tell you this. I'm going to help you out, Job.
Well, we don't know anything about these guys.
No, we don't.
We know nothing of their background. What have they done before? Have they been friends to others?
Yes.
You know, we don't know anything about that, so we don't know where this idea came from.
That's true. I think there is some interaction previously between Job and these friends. They had known each other. In prior dealings, they were known as friends to Job. Yes. Yes. Very good. All right. I appreciate your comments. I really do. Okay. Now, that's the first half of Eliphaz's first speech. Now, let's look in chapter 5. And then he, starting now in verse 1 through verse 7, he seems to, rhetorically, I don't think he really means this, but I think what he's saying, he says it in a way to remind Job, you've got nowhere to turn, Job. Who else can you, where else can you call, where else can you go to receive the help? You really ought to seek out God. Now that's what he's going to say. And again, that's not bad advice. That's always good advice. Seek God out. Whether you're in prosperity or in adversity, that's true. But he's saying, as you see in verse 1, call now. Is there anyone who will answer you? And to which of the holy ones will you turn? Go ahead, Job. Call out. If you're going to stick to your innocence that you say you've done nothing wrong, then go ahead and call. And just see who's going to answer you. Because again, in Eliphaz's mind, when a man is as guilty as he is certain Job is guilty, when such a one calls out, is God going to answer? He doesn't think so. That's not his idea of how God has things arranged. Verse 2. For vexation slays the foolish man, and anger kills the simple. Verse 3, I have seen the foolish taking root, and I cursed his abode immediately. His sons are far from safety, they are even oppressed in the gate, neither is there a deliverer. What's he calling Job, at least down through verse 4?
Foolish.
You're foolish. Job, you're foolish. Another. A slap across the face. Underhanded comment. Now, I think by now Eliphaz is well aware of what Job is claiming. Eliphaz is not stupid. He's understanding what Job... He's hearing what Job is saying, but I think he also knows what Job is meaning by the words he's chosen. And he gets the idea that Job is claiming innocence. So he's trying to address that now in his mind. Undeserving of this punishment. He implies that Job is foolish. And the foolish get what they deserve. We stopped in verse 4. Verse 5. What about the harvest of the foolish man? Well, the hungry devour it. Take it to the place of thorns. There's a schemer who is eager for their wealth. Now look carefully at verses 6 and 7. For affliction does not come from the dust, neither does trouble sprout from the ground. For man is born for trouble as sparks fly upward. Especially verse 6. When he says that affliction does not come from the dust, neither does trouble sprout from the ground. What do you think he's saying with that? That's right. Crops just don't come up on their own. You've got to sow it. Job, this kind of stuff just doesn't happen for no reason. You're going to sit here and claim innocence. I'm telling you, Job, that's not how it works. You're getting what you deserve. You've done something egregiously wrong. You're going to have to answer for it. Well, Job hadn't done anything wrong. But was this happening for no reason? Now, we know that. Okay. We know. As Brother Harold said a moment ago, we also are in on this reasons behind the drama. But Job didn't know. And Eliphaz didn't know. Eliphaz thought he knew, but he really didn't know. So, again, the insinuations, the implied accusations. Job, you're guilty. Job, you're a fool if you keep holding to this way that you're thinking about it. And you're going to have to stop doing it. You're going to have to change the way you're thinking. So in rhetoric, he challenges Job to call out to those who might answer him. And then he gives his counsel. Look, starting now in verse 8. And let's read down through verse 16. And again, this is more theology. And we'll go ahead and show the next point. I think we'll see it in a moment. That he is theologically true in all this. Let's read now verses 8 through 16. Charles, would you read those verses for us, please, of Job chapter 5? Does Eliphaz have some skill? What he says there is very beautiful. Is there anything incorrect about that? It's true. Verse 10, God gives rain on the earth, sends water on the fields. What did Jesus say about God in Matthew 5? Sends His rain where? He does. He's the source of those blessings. That's absolutely correct. Verse 12, He frustrates the plotting of the shrewd so that their hands cannot attain success. Is that true? Can God, and does God eventually, if not in this life, but eventually thwart the shrewd? Yes, He does. So Eliphaz, he's got some oratorial skills. He can spout out some pretty fancy sounding, beautiful, poetic stuff. And that is correct. Verse 16, the helpless have hope, and unrighteousness must shut its mouth. So the advice in verse 8, Job, if I were you, I would seek God. Now that's always good advice, as I said before. Yes, Harold. Yeah. Yes, that's correct. But here are those three points on the chart there. God gives physical blessings. He frustrates and captures the shrewd and ungodly. He saves the helpless and the poor. And he does all those things, plus a whole lot more that Eliphaz doesn't mention. But I'm just simply saying, as he begins to exalt God in this speech, which it's proper to exalt God, although I don't think Eliphaz's motives are entirely correct in this, but his words are correct. They're just not of any help right now. Rob? That's right. And that Job doesn't need to be told these things. Job already knows them.
This whole thing. Doc, you can reach any conclusion that you want to if your premise is false.
Yes.
He started off with a false premise.
Yes.
All these things fit in fine, but then the conclusion is wrong because your premise was wrong.
Very good way to analyze that, Brother Lambert. I think that's correct. So, Job should place his cause before God who can do great and marvelous things. And now he concludes, and this is the last part of chapter 5, and we won't finish this today, but he concludes by emphasizing how much better off Job will be if he repents. Now here's, Job, here's what, let's try to in capsule form, if we can take all these words that Eliphaz is saying and put them in just a few succinct sentences. That's a tongue twister. Job, you're guilty. No, who can stand before such a God in the condition that you are in? Foolish men suffer. They'll perish. Job advised you, I would seek God. And now he says, you will feel a whole lot better and you'll be a whole lot better off if you'll just repent. Things will be so much better for you, Job. Your fortunes will be reversed. They'll turn around if you will do but that. Verse 17. Behold, how happy is the man whom God reproves. So do not despise the discipline of the Almighty. Does that sound familiar? Is that taught somewhere else in the Scripture? Hebrews 12. Those whom the Lord loves, what's He do? He chastens. So again, this is theologically correct. Job, you'll be happy if you accept the reproving God is giving you and don't despise it. And that is precisely the words of the Hebrew writer in Hebrews 12, 5 through 11. Recall in that passage, and this isn't a class on Hebrews, I know, but when we were children, and if we received the reproof of our physical fathers, he says, though for the moment it was what? It was not joyous, it was painful, but yet it yields the peaceable fruit of righteousness by those, or for those who are trained by it. That's precisely what Eliphaz is saying, Job. Now this is from God. He is chastening you. He's chastising you. He's reproving you. And Job, you ought to sit there in humility and take it and realize it for what it is, admit your error, and then it'll all be over. Do we teach our children that, basically, when they're caught in trouble? That's sort of the message. Look, if you'll just do better about this, we'll get this over with, and then life can go on back to normal. And that's really the message. We have to stop there for class time being over. So we'll pick up here then Wednesday night, the Lord willing, with this slide right here, right in the middle of chapter 5. If you didn't get a copy of the next material, you'll need that for Wednesday night. Rob has some copies here, and he'll see that you get one. Thank you.